Hi, everyone. Welcome to Tribe Talk. Jim Rosenhaus along with you this weekend from Progressive Field in downtown Cleveland. We have an absolutely loaded show for you this week. An unusually busy week on the good news front for the Indians in the offseason. Normally, this is somewhat of a quiet time of year, but a great announcement earlier this week by Tribe General Manager Chris Antonetti. Terry Francona signed to a contract extension. We'll have all the details on that and hear from the Indians manager as well as the Tribe GM coming up later in the program. Also, a great week awards-wise and a potentially big week coming up for a pair of Indians players. First off, this week, the Louisville Slugger Silver Slugger Awards for excellence at the various positions offensively on the diamond. Tribe catcher Yan Gomes named the Silver Slugger Award winner behind the plate, and left fielder Michael Brantley taking the Silver Slugger Award for that position as well. And now next week, we'll look ahead. On Thursday, Brantley has been officially named as one of the top candidates for the American League Most Valuable Player Award. The vote will be Thursday and announced Thursday night. And then on Wednesday, a day prior, a day a lot of people looking forward to on the pitching front, Corey Kluber officially named as a candidate for the Cy Young Award. And certainly Kluber, one of the heavy favorites to win that award, as it appears to be coming down to Kluber and Mariners ace King Felix Hernandez. So a lot to get to on the program. We'll hear from Gomes and Brantley, Francona and Antonetti. It's all coming your way as Tribe Talk gets rolling on the Indians Radio Network. Welcome back to Tribe Talk. Jim Rosenhaus along with you from Progressive Field in downtown Cleveland, where the renovations continue rolling along at a pretty good clip as the weather starts to get a little more chilly, and there'll be some challenges certainly in the weeks ahead for construction crews, but things taking shape nicely out in the right field area, which is undergoing a major renovation with the hopes that it's ready to roll in time for opening day 2015 when the Indians host the Tigers on April the 10th. In the home opener and in the dugout that day for the Tribe will be manager Terry Francona. Francona will start his third season as the Indians manager with the knowledge that he could be here through the 2020 season, if not further than that, as earlier this week the Indians announced that a contract extension has been signed by the Tribe manager that will carry him through 2018 with club options for the next two seasons, taking him through 2020. And it's been a real nice start to his Tribe managerial career. Back-to-back winning seasons for the Indians. First time that's happened since 2000 and 2001. His overall winning percentage during that time, .546. Only 3 days during those two seasons have the Indians not been in contention for a playoff spot. They earned the wild card slot a year ago and took it down to the final weekend of the season this year. It's really been a fine career for Terry Francona, as his clubs have posted winning records now for 10 consecutive seasons. And obviously, a lot of that coming with the Boston Red Sox, including the two World Series titles. And boy, he's holding out hope that that can happen here in the city of Cleveland. And we had a chance to visit with the Tribe manager earlier this week, and he talked about why the timing was right for a contract extension.
Well, I don't think there's ever a bad time to stay here for a while. I mean, because of how I feel about this entire place. Chris had come to me earlier, I don't know the exact date, earlier in the year, and just asked me if I was interested in exploring something like that. Because when you do something like that, you know, you always run the risk of hurting feelings or not getting it done. And, you know, we certainly didn't want that to happen. But I told him, honestly, that I really didn't want to move on from here. That all the things I said in my what I think is really cool, you know, you watch every manager in their press conference, their first press conference. They say all these things, and they're all true. They all feel them. But what's really cool for me is 2 years later, I'm getting to live them out. And I still feel the same way 2 years from now, except maybe stronger than I did that day I got hired. And for that, I'm really grateful.
So along those lines, have there been some things here that have exceeded what you thought they might be when you first got hired?
You know what? I knew how I felt already. You know, I had relationships with Mark and Chris, but I didn't know Mike Chernoff and Derek Falvey and Sky Anderchik, that group. I really hadn't really met them. Now working with those guys, you know, Ross Atkins, and I don't want to leave out names because that's no good, because there's a lot more. But being with those guys for 2 years, you know, we're a pretty tight-knit group. And I'm talking about all the way from the clubhouse kids to the trainers to Paul Dolan to Mark. We do things together. We have fun doing it. We run into our share of challenges, and we try to tackle them together. And I do know that during the toughest times, and there are a lot of tough times during a year, that's probably when I appreciate being here the most. So that's a good thing.
You talk about the people that you work with, the situation that you're in. I know the city is a part of that too. You worked in three very different baseball cities, no question. And what is it about here that you like so much?
Well, you know, I grew up 80 miles from here in a very similar type environment. You know, Midwest values. Cleveland, I think, is kind of almost a little bit like maybe our team, and shoot, maybe even myself. You know, you get pushed around a little bit, get kicked a little bit, now you're ready to kick back, fight back. And for where I'm at, maybe not just in life, but in baseball also, being here is something that I'm really grateful for. And I know that in our game, and Rosie, you're around it, you see every day, you walk by my office every day, I'm always sitting there, same place every day, it's like Groundhog Day. If you don't enjoy it, it can run you into the ground. And I know that every morning I wake up, I'm excited to come to work. I'm excited to come to work with who I work with. And even when things aren't going the way we want it to, I'm excited to try to tackle those challenges because I know the people I'm doing it with, I know they care about me, and I know I care about them.
On the field, you took over a club that was struggling in the years before you got here, and it's back-to-back winning seasons and playoff appearance. Did that part of it come quicker than maybe you thought it was? Because it seemed like it would be a big job when you took over.
You know what? It's funny because I don't think I ever really look at it like that because every day seems like a big job. I mean, last year, there were so many struggles last year. So many things didn't go the way we wanted them to go. Yet, we got down to the last week and, you know, we needed some help and we didn't quite get there, but we had a chance. I don't think you ever quite just say this happened or this happened. We stay in the moment so much, and you hear me say it all the time, and it's because I believe it. I think if you stay in the moment and you do the best you can, at the end of the year, you're gonna look up and you're gonna be where you deserve to be. And hopefully one of these days, that's gonna carry us a little bit farther than it has so far.
You're gonna be here for a while now. The contract extension. You have some key players who are in the same boat. Michael Brantley's, Corey Kluber, Jan Gomes, Jason Kipnis, among others. How important is that now that you're a part of that and can grow with that too?
I actually checked with a couple of the players. You know, that's a little bit of a sensitive subject because you're trying to keep it semi-private when you're doing a contract, but I checked with a couple of guys because I wanted to make sure, because I believe this is about the players. And certainly this is the way I make my living, and it's important to me, but what's the most important is the players. And I wanted them to be comfortable knowing that I was gonna be here also, or I wouldn't have done this.
We're recording this in the Terrace Club. Behind you is a big project going on, renovations out in right field. Fun to know that you're gonna be a part of that too.
I'm probably more excited about this than most people are. Because that's the view I have every day. And I think where our city is, I think this is going to bring us more in line. I think it's going to be more intimate. I love it. I'm really excited. I can't wait for opening day to show up and see what the ballpark looks like and to see what some of the people in our offices that have all these ideas, see what they can do with them, because I think it's going to be really cool.
And in closing, at this stage of your career, maybe you feel differently about Cleveland now than you would have when you got the Philadelphia job or when you went to Boston. Is this the right time in your career to be here at this spot?
You know what, Rosie? I thought Philadelphia was the right place. I mean, shoot, I was 37 years old. I was so honored that somebody thought I deserved to be a major league manager. You know, and then you get older and you hopefully learn and hopefully get wiser. Not always sure that's the case, but you try. I just know that from what I've been through, all the experiences, you try to take what's really important to you and factor that in. And when I do that, it always comes up being here. And Chris and I have talked about this at length. And it's just, I don't want to be anywhere else. And I'm not sure I care about who makes the most money. I just want to be in a place where I can be happy, because there are so many challenges in this job that make it so difficult that being with people, the right people, is really important.
That's Indians manager Terry Francona talking about a contract extension that could take him through the 2020 season. When we come back, we'll hear from Tribe General Manager Chris Santinetti, get his thoughts on the news from earlier this week. That's after this timeout on the Indians Radio Network. Welcome back to Tribe Talk. We join you from Progressive Field. Jim Rosenhaus along with you this weekend. And if you'd like to join us on Twitter, you can do so. Our Twitter address, at Indians Radio. All the information you need on the broadcast front there, including guests on this show, showtimes throughout the offseason, and then, of course, once spring training and the season begins. Much more than that, so we hope you can join us on Twitter, at Indians Radio. And don't forget, coming up shortly in our show, we'll hear from Yan Gomes, Tribe catcher, Michael Brantley, Indians left fielder, both named Louisville Slugger Silver Slugger Award winners earlier this week. We'll get their thoughts on that. But first, a quick roundup with Indians general manager Chris Santinetti, some of his thoughts on signing Terry Francona, Tribe manager, to a contract extension. He met with the Cleveland media, including the likes of Tom Withers from the Associated Press, Jordan Bastian from Indians.com, and the legendary Paul Hoynes from the Plain Dealer, just some of those asking the questions of the Tribe about having Terry Francona in the fold now for quite some time.
Well, as you know, we're extremely excited to announce that we've agreed to a contract extension with Terry Francona through the 2018 season and potentially for as long as 2020. So something we're really excited about because of how much Tito has meant to the organization over the last couple of years and his role moving forward with us. He's made an incredible impact not only on our culture and the Major League clubhouse and the Major League team, but has had an extraordinary impact throughout the organization with his leadership, his communication, and the way he's connected various members or various parts of the organization. So something we're really excited about, to secure Tito's future in Cleveland and ensure that he will be an integral part of our success moving forward.
Hey, Chris, has he been even more impactful than you could have imagined when you hired him in 2012?
You know, Tom, that's hard to answer in some ways because we had such – we held Tito in such high regard coming in, but I would say as excited as we were about the day we hired him, we're probably more excited today having the benefit of working alongside him for the last 2 years, because it's one thing for someone to say those things and for you to expect them to act a certain way and then for you to live it and see it firsthand and how much he cares about players and how committed he is to finding a way to win and put players in a position to be successful and creating a right environment and culture. Having the opportunity to see that firsthand really has been fun to see.
Chris, what is it about the timing doing this right now that you feel was beneficial?
Well, just felt like, it's been such a good fit with Tito here, and with the organization and with the city. And Tito expressed multiple times how happy he was and how fulfilled he was working here in the environment we have. And we looked at this as an opportunity just to make sure we secured that moving forward. And I think, when you have a mutual respect and appreciation and a desire to get something done, that's usually a pretty good foundation to reach an agreement.
Chris, does this the extension kind of coincides with the beginning of the free agent period. Do you think that'll help you down the road, even this year, this winter, when people know that Francona's going to be here, maybe to the end of his career?
Well, I don't think Tito would say till the end of his career, but it's a long time. And I think it absolutely helps us, Paul, as we talk to free agents, because one of the things players consider is they're looking at what their next opportunity will be, the environment they're going to go to work in every day. And I think if you survey the player community, Tito's as well regarded as any manager for the environment he creates in the clubhouse, and how much players enjoy and respect playing for him. So I would expect that he'll continue to be a huge asset for us as we try to pursue free agents down the road.
Is there a concern about the shelf life of a manager? I mean, you know, you always hear guys that have been in one spot for a while, they say the, you know, the players stop listening or they need to hear a new message. Do you worry about that?
With Tito, I have no worry about that. No. I mean, I think he finds a great way to connect with people, and no matter what their backgrounds are, no matter what their experiences have been, and I think he's in a place where he's fulfilled and he's energized, and you know, as long as we continue with that dynamic, I think he'll be successful for a very long time.
Hey, Chris, along those lines, have you ever met anybody quite like Tito and that ability to kind of connect with anybody?
You know, in different places of life, you know, you're fortunate to encounter a lot of very impressive people, but you know, none immediately come to mind. Specifically in this setting as a major league manager, it's just he has such a great way of communicating and connecting with people, no matter whether it's the, you know, the parking lot attendant or the, you know, clubhouse personnel or the highest profile free agent or Michael Jordan. You know, it's just he just has that ability to. You know, to connect with people, and because he's so genuine and authentic.
2 years ago when you guys made the playoffs, you know, obviously wins manager of the year for his work in that season. Last year, you know, I think maybe a lot of it goes a little more unnoticed. Guys don't make the playoffs but win 85 games. But what can you say about the job he was able to do last year, just given the amount of, you know, adversity and the amount of young players he used down the stretch? Just can you speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, I think one of the things that makes Tito so successful is how consistent he is. And I think the job that he did this past season was equally as good as, or if not better than the job he did in 2013 when we made the playoffs. So I think that consistency and the way he approaches each day, you know, allows him to be able to maintain that success year after year. So I know that our record wasn't quite as good. Maybe we had a few more things go our way in 2013 than we did in 2014, but Tito's effort, the way he communicated, the way he obsessed about putting players in position to be successful, that was the exact same in 2014 as it was in 2013.
How long had you guys been talking about this?
I think we talked about it initially, probably towards the end of the season. I don't have the specific date, but towards the end of the season. And as you know, it actually wasn't a very long process to get done. I think there was a great foundation in place where we were thrilled to have Tito here and wanted to try to figure out a way to extend it, and Tito felt similarly. So, you know, we were able to reach a resolution relatively quickly, and then we just had to work through some timing issues as it related to, you know, logistics, playoffs, things like that.
That's Indians General Manager Chris Santinetti. Stay tuned. When we come back, we'll hear from Yan Gomes and Michael Brantley as we continue on Tribe Talk after this timeout on the Cleveland Indians Radio Network. Welcome back to Tribe Talk. Jim Rosenhaus along with you this weekend. And the award season is underway in Major League Baseball. Several awards already handed out, including the Gold Glove Awards, and earlier this week, the Silver Slugger Awards, presented annually by the bat company Louisville Slugger, going to the top offensive players at each position in both the American and National Leagues. And for the first time since the 2000 season, the Indians have a pair of Silver Slugger Award winners in the same year. Michael Brantley won the award for left fielders, and Yan Gomes has won the award for catchers. And we caught up with Yan from his off-season home in Knoxville, Tennessee, where we caught him between off-season workouts. He's at it already, preparing for next season. But a chance for him to reflect on a year in which he hit .278, 25 doubles, 21 home runs, and he drove in 74 runs, leading American League catchers in average and extra base hits. And he was second in runs driven in, third in home runs, just an outstanding all-around year for the Indians catcher. And we talked to him about the competition from some pretty good catchers in the American League who had good seasons, including Salvador Perez of Kansas City, Kurt Suzuki of Minnesota. But it was Gomes who got the award, and he says that that good competition in his own division makes the award that much more special.
Absolutely. It's a great honor to, like I said, in a way, beat some of those guys out. But it was, I still have a ton of respect for those guys and the work that all of them put in. And it goes unnoticed, you know, especially, you know, I think just being a candidate, you know, because us was like with the Gold Glove, I think just being a finalist is just a great honor. And to be able to win it, I'm very, very thankful for that.
Yeah, and you look at earning a Silver Slugger Award, and we talk so much about what you do defensively and your strengths there. How much of a challenge is it to have a good year offensively because of the position that you play?
I think, honestly, it has everything to do with, you know, with being behind the plate. Especially, you know, with a guy like Tito telling me every day, you know, you do anything you do offensively is just a bonus. And I think that helped me out a lot. It helped me clear my head and not be so worried about what I was doing offensively. And it definitely helped me calm down and the consistency of that I was getting. I was able to relax a lot more.
And when you look at staying strong throughout a season, this is 2 years in a row now where you have performed very well in the second half, unusual for catchers. What's the key for you there?
I don't think I have a secret recipe. I think it's just being able to stay within myself. Ty Van Berkel helped me out a lot. Just be able to simplify everything that we were doing. And I called him, you know, I wanted to kind of personally tell him thank you for not just to him and Matt Quatraro who helped me out with my hitting. And it was just the relationship that we had. It was able to help me out so much to relax, you know, especially being a catcher and having to worry about two different things.
And you mentioned that relationship with your hitting coaches, and maybe fans don't know, they might see just your standard batting practice before a game, but how much other work are you doing on your hitting prior to even regular batting practice with the team?
Ty is, to me, he's one of the main reasons I think I've had the type of success I've had at the plate. You know, he figured out my swing, and he knows my swing better than I do. And I'm, you know, the relationship that we have is just, he knows when I can just, you know, go through my routine and get things done to when I need to, you know, actually go through some drills. And he's got the perfect drills for me to do. And everything that we do, he's kind of leading the car here for me. I gave him the key, let him drive it, and I'm just there at the plate hitting.
A lot of modesty from Yan Gomes. Hey, your teammate Michael Brantley, also a Silver Slugger Award winner, and you had a chance to watch him all season long. Nice to see another teammate get some recognition as well.
Oh, absolutely, man. I think, you know, especially getting an MVP candidate and being a finalist, it was pretty amazing seeing that guy. And you talk about consistency with me. I mean, talk about consistency with that guy. You know, he took it to another level, you know, especially being not just, you know, a good hitter, you know, being able to put up numbers. I mean, the guy would do it late in the game. You know, he hit two or three walk-off homers for us, and it was pretty amazing, you know. And I think I credit him a lot for just, you know, seeing the way he approached the ball or being at the plate. And it just helped out, and I know it helped out a lot of other guys in the lineup.
And you mentioned Michael Brantley up for the MVP next week, and also Corey Kluber up for Cy Young, yourself and Michael Silver Slugger Award winners. Terry Francona signing a contract extension. I would think as a player looking forward to a new season next year, this has to be a fun week.
Oh, absolutely. It's an exciting time in Cleveland. And I know it's definitely exciting because of, you know, basketball and football right now, but I think we're going to be right there with them, and it's going to be an exciting time to be in Cleveland.
John, it's early November. What are you doing right now? You getting ready for next season?
Absolutely, man. I just got done with my first session with lifting, and now I guess this phone call kind of lets me take a break, and then I'm going back at it again.
All right, man. Well, thanks for coming by. We appreciate it as always. Congratulations.
Thank you very much, Rosie.
So how about that? Yan Gomes getting after it already down in his offseason home in Tennessee. Michael Brantley, you can be sure that he is doing the same as he won the award for left fielders. And what a year for him that has not only made him the Silver Slugger Award winner for left fielders, but also a finalist now officially for the American League Most Valuable Player Award that will be announced next Thursday. Here's the numbers for Brantley. He became the first Indians player to compile 200 hits, 45-plus doubles, 20-plus home runs, 20-plus stolen bases in the 114-year history of the franchise. So what a stretch of play that Brantley put together this season. The ninth member now of the Indians' 20-home run, 20-stolen base club, and the first Indians batter since 1996 to put together a 200-hit season. Kenny Lofton, the last to do that. Earlier this week, Brantley talked about what the award means to him.
It's a great honor. It really is. When I sit back and kind of reflect on the season, and just, you know, to the coaching staff, teammates, to the trainers, to my family support, just everybody that helped me get through the season and the fun season we had together, to be recognized for these awards, it's a blessing and an honor.
And if you look back at this season for Michael Brantley, it's been a steady progression in his major league career in terms of performance, but this year a significant jump in terms of batting average at .327. His prior best in a season was .288, and power-wise, the 45 doubles a career high, the 20 home runs a career high, the 97 runs driven in easily a career high. So a lot of good things going on, and he says that big leap this season was spurred by significant changes heading into the year in terms of approach.
One of the biggest things was I changed my mental approach. I wasn't up there just trying to walk or work counts. I was really trying to get a fastball early and put a good swing on it. In the past, I never tried to do that before, really. I usually try to work counts, get on base, make sure I was getting the perfect pitch. And this year, I wanted to be more aggressive. I figured maybe a good first pitch fastball to hit early. I was ready to swing to try to put a good swing on the ball.
And, of course, Brantley, one of several young players, along with Yan Gomes and Jason Kipnis, among others, who have signed long-term contracts, and now their manager has done the same. And he talked about why that signing of Terry Francona to a contract extension earlier this week is important to him.
It's exciting because it's somewhere that he wants to be, and he's happy being here coaching us. And we're happy playing for him. He's a player's manager, as everybody always says. And he allows you to go out there and play the game of baseball, have fun, and enjoy it. 162-game season is a long season, but when you enjoy coming to work every day, enjoy your manager, you enjoy the group of guys that you're with and your teammates, it's awesome. It's awesome to be a part of, and something special is going to happen.
And in closing, Michael Brantley, always very much a player who stays in the moment, team-oriented, does not worry much about statistics. So the award kind of caught him by surprise and allowed him to take a nice look back on his season with a little help from his dad, Mickey Brantley, the former Major League player and hitting coach.
Yeah, it's funny. We were just talking the other day. After kind of a couple awards came out, I was nominated for a couple of things. I looked at him and I said, "Hey, Pops, I had a pretty good season, huh?" And he just laughed at me. He said, "Son, you had a great season." But I've never been that player that is really, stat-driven. I care about wins and losses, and I care about my teammates. That's what comes first and foremost for me. My goal, and just like every other year, as soon as I step in spring training, is to get to the postseason and win the World Series. That's a group effort, and we all know that in the locker room, but that's my number one on my list.
So there's some of the thoughts of Michael Brantley, Indians left fielder, a Silver Slugger Award winner, and of course he'll be keeping close watch on the American League Most Valuable Player Award announcement. It's next Thursday, and he has been named an official candidate now, one of the final three for that award on Thursday. And don't forget Wednesday, the Cy Young Award to be announced in the evening. Corey Kluber also announced earlier this week as an official candidate for that award, something that everyone knew by the season that he has put together, and he has to be considered certainly one of the favorites, along with Felix Hernandez of the Seattle Mariners. So a lot to look forward to this coming week. When we come back, we'll have some Major League news and notes after this timeout on the Indians Radio Network. Welcome back to Tribe Talk. Jim Rosenhaus along with our final segment of this week's show from Progressive Field in downtown Cleveland. Major League news and notes and a couple of interesting press conferences earlier this week as the Chicago Cubs, in somewhat controversial fashion, announced Joe Maddon as their manager. That wasn't the controversy, the announcement, but some of the things that led to it in terms of his departure from Tampa Bay and the timing of the Cubs reaching out to him. Perhaps some tampering charges will be filed. We'll see. Depends on who you talk to. But in the end game, Maddon is now the manager of the Chicago Cubs after an impressive 9-year run leading the Tampa Bay Rays to relevance, really, in terms of a team to contend with each season in the American League East. There was the World Series appearance back in 2008. And now Maddon is charged with trying to get the Cubs over the hump and win a World Series. And in his press conference, as always, very entertaining when you visit with Joe Maddon. He talked about the unusual negotiations with Jed Hoyer and Theo Epstein, the higher-ups in the Cubs organization, specifically in terms of location and what they talked about.
I don't know if you guys are aware of that story or not, but that's how I got to meet up with Jed and Theo. Jay and I were on a cross-country trip from Tampa over to California, and we holed up in Navarra Beach, I think it is, down near Pensacola, and that's when we finally got in touch with Theo and Jed. They came on down. We kind of sat behind the Cousin Eddie, that's our RV, the Cousin Eddie 43-foot Winnebago. And we sat back there and pretty much just talked philosophy about how this is all going to work. For me, that was the most important thing. That's what I needed to know, that we were philosophically aligned. It had nothing to do with anything other than that. I've been doing this for a bit, and I know I'm a little bit different at times. And so for me, it's really important to have that kind of support from the ownership and from the front office personnel to understand me in a sense. But I think I've had some wonderful mentors to this point. The fact that Theo and I interviewed with Jed about 10 years ago, actually. So we knew there was a lot of common ground, commonality regarding philosophy. And that's what it comes down to. I mean, you're going to ask me a lot of questions in a couple minutes, and I'm happy to answer them all. But at the end of the day, unless we're aligned perfectly, it's not going to work. It just can't work. That's the way the game has evolved to this point. The autocratic manager of the days of yesteryear are gone. It's not just about one guy anymore. It used to be about one guy. When a manager left an organization, went to another one, everything would change. Everything would change, and I always thought that was inappropriate. And I worked for some really good managers with the Angels for a long time, and then, of course, I worked with a real good manager in Tampa Bay. He was pretty solid. Nobody gets it, okay. So I've been doing it for a while. I've worked with a lot of good people, and I know that the synergy between front office and the field today in today's game is really, really that important, and it's always going to be. It's going to get even more important. So to be philosophically aligned with these guys from Jump Street was important to me, and we are. And we talk about stuff already. It's so common. It's so easy. We had a great dinner last night with the Ricketts family, and it was really easy to sit there and absorb the conversation and feel like, you know, I really fit in here. This is a good fit for me personally. And it's not about me, but it is in the sense that I feel comfortable here. Beyond all that, and then I'll get to the questions, I just want to tell you a couple of quick things. We played here this year with the Rays. That was my first experience at Wrigley Field ever. I had ridden my bicycle around it, but that was it when I was with the Angels. One of the games, I don't know what game it was, first, second, or third, whatever. I'd taken a pitcher out of the game. And I'm walking out to them. I go out to the mound, get the ball, give it to the next guy. I'm walking back in. And you have to understand something about your ballpark. I think you do. But it is magical. I'm walking back in, and I'm looking up at the sky. It's perfectly blue. I mean, not kind of blue, perfectly blue. And the rafters, the way you have your light standards set up there, and the people themselves in the stands. And I really had this flashback to Gladiator. Like, you know, like this computer-enhanced situation that's perfect. It was this perfect moment, and I tell myself, shut up and just, you know, watch what's going on and observe what's going on and really appreciate the moment, because we have a tendency in our lives to go through moments quickly. So I did. I slowed it down, and I'm telling you, that ballpark is magical, and I'm really, really excited about being there next year. And I understand, I know you guys get it, but I'm telling you from my perspective, That was the first for me to go in there and see that. So that really struck me. The other thing that struck me was the talent on the field for the Cubs. You know, I heard all about it. You read about it. You see it. You watch. I don't really watch ESPN and all that stuff often, but once in a while I'll catch a glimpse of that. And you'll see the Cub players. And then you get to see them firsthand. And then when I'm watching all this, the thing that really strikes me is the player development program and also the scouting. It's got to be outstanding. It has to be. To get that kind of group here working off the same sheet of music, looking like they do, I was really, really impressed with all that from the other dugout. So these are the kind of things, and I could go on and on, as you could already imagine, but the two things that really stood out from this past summer to me were obviously this cathedral across the street, and then and beyond that, the groupings of players, youthful, talented, really into the game, really tough games, really they never quit. It was beautiful to watch. And the fact that it struck me that a lot of good stuff has been going on here philosophically regarding your scouting and development, and I really want to commend the scouting and development department. I have not met most of these guys, although I know a lot of guys through history with the Cub organization, but you guys have done a great job. We've done a great job. So as it moves forward, that's the stuff that was apparent to me, and you can tell I'm pretty excited about being here. And the other thing, your city's wonderful. I love Chicago. Been here, you know, sporadically as a visitor, but to hang out downtown, I want to live somewhere downtown. I like the energy, I like the vibe, love it. I like the energy, I'm not going to hide. I don't want a gated community. I don't want to live on a country club. I want to be right in the middle of everything. I want to feel everything. And I think when you do that, you really are able, and I did say do, babe. And I really think that you're able to connect with the whole group, and I'm really excited about all that. So there you go. That is my opening statement.
That's Joe Maddon, the new manager of the Chicago Cubs, having some fun on the day that he was introduced to the Chicago media. Later in the week, the Twins wrapped up their managerial search, and they named Hall of Famer Paul Molitor as their new manager. He spent 18 years with the Twins as a player, coach, roving instructor in the minor leagues. Of course, an outstanding career with the Brewers, a little bit of time there with the Blue Jays, among others, and just a great career for him. And now the Twins, for really just the third time in a long, long time, introducing a new manager. And that's something that Molitor talked about during his press conference, the stability in the manager's office for the Minnesota Twins the last several decades.
I'm fortunate to come along in an organization that has had tremendous stability and continuity at the top of its leadership on the field. And I don't know if any other organization can parallel having its last two managers spanning 28 years. I was fortunate to come back here in 96 as a player and play for a guy who I had tremendous respect for across the diamond in Tom Kelly. He really is a gentleman who put this organization on the map in the right direction, which continues today. And I learned a lot from Tom those last 3 years as a player, and I had the privilege of coaching with him for a couple of years. He passed it on to Ron. Ron was the ideal soldier that you would want in your organization. All the years he spent as a minor league manager, major league coach, certainly his 13 years at the helm here, won over 1,000 games, a lot of division championships. I had the privilege of being on his staff last year and learned a great deal from him, watching him work day to day, the commitment that he had, the passion, the integrity, preparation. He gave me a great opportunity to be a part of that, and I'm indebted to him for that opportunity. But I get to follow that pattern, hopefully, and hopefully I'll be able to leave my own mark as we go forward. I want to make sure that I acknowledge my family that is here today. My wife, Destiny, and my daughter, Blair, and my son, Ben, my daughter, Julia. I have some extended family here, my sisters, my brother. It's a huge part of anything that we do, relationships and support. And I'm grateful for them that they would be here today. It's a mutual decision amongst family. This is a big deal. And I have no doubt in my mind whatsoever that I'm exactly where I'm supposed to be right now here today. It's been a long journey for me. I've had opportunities to think about this for many, many years. And I've spun it through and I've spun it out, and then finally everything kind of seemed to come together right. I was joking Terry today. I appreciated the expedited process that got me here. But it took a while, and I respect tremendously what they did to get to this decision. And in all due diligence, this is where it landed. But I have no doubt that this is where I'm supposed to be. My wife and I prayed about it a lot. We feel very content with that. I have their support, and we know that's a good thing. We have to make sacrifices to accomplish things in life, and I think we're all prepared to roll up our sleeves and do what we need to do to make this thing happen. Want to open up the questions. The last thing I say, I'm coming here to win. I think that it's very important to lay that out there right from the start. Things can change in this game very dramatically at this level, very quickly. And I think a big part of going forward is we talk about family and relationships and how good relationships produce good fruit. Well, I think I hope to be a lot about relationships within our organization, but also with our players. I think we're going to have a way of going forward that is going to enable that to be something that's positive, that enables whatever roster we put together to be the best that it can be. I want it to be something that's supportive amongst itself, leadership from players, accountability certainly, but creating a vision that they believe that they can win now, because things can change very, very rapidly, and I hope that we can set that tone in motion. It's something that I look forward to the challenge of trying to do.
So that's Paul Molitor, new manager of the Minnesota Twins, trying to end four consecutive seasons of 90 or more losses for a Twins franchise that had it all together from 2000 to 2010. They were a perennial contender in the American League Central Division. Now the one vacant managerial position to keep an eye on is down in Tampa Bay with the departure of Joe Maddon. The Rays announcing earlier this week the candidates for that job, and some interesting names, including Raul Ibanez and Kevin Cash, Indians bullpen coach who has been a hot commodity this season on the managerial interview front. He made a great impression on the folks in Texas and made it down to their final three candidates before missing out on that opportunity. But now he's in the mix down in Tampa, and it looks like the Rays are going to give him a serious look, and I'm going to guess from Kevin's perspective, we had him on a couple of weeks ago on Tribe Talk talking about the Texas situation, but here's a young coach who grew up, born and raised in Tampa, and would love to get back to that area, the Tampa Bay, St. Pete area, and be a major league manager for that ball club. So he'll go through that process, and we'll see how that plays out in the weeks ahead. Well, that's going to do it for this week's edition, a very busy edition of Tribe Talk. Hope you can join us again next week as we'll be right here at Progressive Field. Until then, this is Jim Rosenhaus reminding you've been listening to Tribe Talk on the Cleveland Indians Radio Network.